This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawera Karatai. Kia ora, Mawera.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. What are your plans for the rest of the week?
Bread making, probably. Just the usual. Probably some gardening.
Chasing around after a mountain biker.
Chasing around at Rao, yes, driving around a biker and all the other mountain bikers all around the countryside. How about you?
It sounds like none of those things except perhaps resting. But there is swimming to be done.
Swimming is equally important as mountain biking.
And we are almost at the end of the coming up for air episodes. Do we have today?
Our third to last student is the very wonderful Zoe Abbas. Welcome, Zoe. It is an absolute joy to have you here today.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
Kia ora. Where did you grow up, Zoe?
So I actually was born in Hong Kong and raised there for 13 years. And then I moved to Queenstown, New Zealand, and went to Waketipu High School. I'm at Otago University. I'm now in my fourth year there doing Masters of Sustainable Business.
What was it like for those first 13 years in Hong Kong?
Oh, it was awesome. I absolutely loved it. It's just thriving. It's loud. There's so much to do. I went to Canadian International School there, so I was one of many expats. My dad grew up there, my grandparents grew up there, so I love Hong Kong, very much a part of me.
And then you moved to Queenstown, a bit of a shock?
Yeah, big shock. So I've got a Kiwi mum, she's actually from Masterton in the North Island, but my uncle lived here with my cousins and we thought so beautiful, we came here a couple of times to go skiing, so mum thought, I think it's time. And I love it.
And did you have a feeling of where have all the people gone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a very quiet town. Not too much to do when you're not a tourist here, but it is, yeah, I love it. Such kind people.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
To be honest, I wanted to be a lawyer for a long, long time. Or a banker like my parents. But then, you know, you hear about all the issues in the world surrounding the environment, social, everything. And so sustainable business really piqued my interest, actually. That was mostly because of Sarah Walton's class and then all of the ongoing issues my dad would constantly tell me.
What did you do your undergrad in?
Well, I started in international business, but then I changed to management.
Oh. So what was it that Sarah did that was so impressive?
Oh, I just found, you know, we did a few assignments and you calculate your carbon emissions and you talk about what would your future look like if it kept going this way. And I found it fascinating, to be honest. And so many of my other papers were just how do you run a company, how do you keep people happy in a business. And I thought, oh, this is far more interesting and I think a lot more topical.
And you've followed that up with starting a master's in sustainable business.
Yes, yes. So I'm loving it. I'm doing my thesis. I'm working on my ethics approval at the moment. And my thesis topic is diversifying Queenstown's economy after being solely reliant on tourism. And I found an issue in that after the pandemic hit. And, you know, you really saw the issues in being 100% reliant on tourists when they're not allowed to come into the country. So I looked at some other small towns similar to Queenstown and what their diversification strategies were. And I found it really interesting. They talked about technology alongside tertiary education, alongside healthcare, just expanding those sectors. And then the more I looked into it, I found that Otago University is actually going to be moving into the technology space in Queenstown. I'm looking into those diversification strategies. Haven't gotten too far yet, but I'm really looking forward to it.
There's been quite a lot of talk in Queenstown brewing, and it seemed like there was almost a bit of a fight with, I think it was the mayor, who don't think quite understood, about developing regenerative tourism. Do you think that that's right. Is that the plan A?
I'm unsure. I think perhaps it's plan A. I don't actually know too much about it, but I know plan B for many residents, or their plan A, to be fair, is finding other things that you can be reliant on. So in case another pandemic hit, you know, you've got so many more locals who are able to carry on working and you're not so reliant on people who don't even live in Queenstown.
Cool. Let's take your music choice. Let's have Green Tea Peng, Mr. Sun. Why this one?
Well, you know, no specific reason other than I really like it. It's quite a happy song, just about the sun. I thought that could go with sustainable business. I just really like this song.
Woke up today and the sun was shining. I said, Miss the sun. Where have you been? He told me, sorry, dear, I had to go away. But never have no fear, I'm always back again. I got to show you the dark so you can really feel the light, you know. I need you. I'm only happy with you. No one lifts me like you do. You really are a vital dude, aren't you? In your presence, I'm extra green. I know I like to get extra lean. I want you all, there's no in between. I'm all or nothing, you know what I mean. I can't lie, I Yo, Mr. Sun. I can't lie, I need you, Mr. Sun. Chasing after you, I'm on the run. Chasing after you, I'm on the run. I'm stuck today inside, the sun is shining and I know. But I can't see it. It's looking very grey. My greens all gone away.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui ki a koutou ko tahua hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough. We've had to navigate our way through a global pandemic and its aftermath, and here we are, standing in a new dawn, in a new reality, and doing our best to help each other to get through. As I speak to you now, I'm standing in the water on the boat ramp in Portobello, my first home, the Otago Peninsula, where I grew up until the age of 7 as a wee girl in the sea or up a tree. And then my mother and I went to LA and then to Glasgow and then to England. And we settled in England. And for the first 18 years of my life, I moved between England and New Zealand. And finally at 18 was able to return here. And I got my first job at the aquarium. And so as I stand here with you now, I can see some beautiful snails, some beautiful 11-armed stars, some beautiful coralline algae, and all of these lovely aquatic friends serve to remind me how rich the world we live in is. So many squillions of other life forms sharing this space with us right here, right now. And here we are, able to marvel at them and care for them as much as we possibly can with the time that we have left. What a pleasure that is. What a privilege that is. What a window into our own hearts each of these life forms provide, that we can care for them, that we have the power, that we have the capacity. It's such a gift. And as I turn and look out over the waves, the rippling waves, all the patterns that they make, the colours that they reflect from the sky, like the inside of a pawa shell, how lucky we are to see these colours, these shapes, these patterns, this beauty, and this deep and abiding peace that resides within can come forward in these moments of reflection and appreciation. It's been interesting for me being back here and noticing the patterns and the rhythms of life here in this very small coastal settlement. Every so often, when I'm standing here in the water, my daily hydrotherapy, and a boat comes past, of course, after the boat moves away, there are these big waves from the wake of the boat. And in a way, that's what we're experiencing now. We are standing in the wake of this global pandemic. And of course, those ripples and those waves are affecting us all in different ways. I know up at Orokonui Eco Sanctuary, my heart's home workplace, we are still struggling to return to the point financially that we were pre-COVID, and we may never return there. but we're certainly finding many new ways of adapting and working in with community to sustain ourselves and those beautiful taonga species that we have there. I was very fortunate today to have my beautiful eco warriors visit me, and we were able to go and see many, many beautiful invertebrates that are living around the visitor centre. And of course, even just around the visitor centre, where the habitat has been regrowing for 17 years, there are now a profusion of rare and beautiful native spiders and moths and butterflies and worms and beetles, and all these beautiful ancient ancestors of ours have quite happily made a home there. So I really hope in your day to day you're finding ways to marvel at the resilience of the world around you, and of course the resilience of your inner world. I love being part of this show and being able to speak with you. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blown Bubbles team for having me. And I'll talk with you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Zoe Abyss.
Hi, how are you?
Zoe, we're going to listen to your podcast shortly, which is going to, well, I've already heard it and it's awesome. Why did you choose the person you chose, and what's something that you want the listeners to listen out for?
Well, initially I heard about, so their name is Arbol Eco Homes, because my dad was driving past their site one day. So they're in Cromwell, and yeah, he was looking for a home for my grandma actually, so he heard about it through his friends. But it really stood out to me because they're tackling an urgent problem in New Zealand, I feel. So, you know, the need for healthier, more energy efficient homes. So living here, we often hear about how common it is to have a cold, damp home, and you constantly have to maintain it and fix it. And so Arbol's approach is modular, low energy, passive house construction, which offers those solutions, you know, not only for the environment, but resident well-being. So I think it's really interesting. And I think if students are listening or other people are listening, they're definitely a company to check out because they're such lovely guys. I spoke to Todd and Marcus in the interview for the podcast. Such lovely, really, really clever guys. And I think this is one way that construction should be done, given that it is causing 50% of global emissions at the moment, which is staggering.
Hi everyone, welcome to today's episode where we dive into an issue that affects not just the environment, but our homes, our communities, and our future: sustainable building practices. My name is Zoe, a master's student in sustainable business at Otago University, and today we'll be exploring how construction practices are evolving to address the pressing need for sustainability. Did you know, according to a 2021 study by Mavi, the construction industry is responsible for 36% of global energy use and 39% of energy-related CO2 emissions? That was in 2021. 3 years later, we're in 2024, and it has now amassed almost 50% of global carbon emissions. 50. It is staggering to think about the environmental impact. But the good news is companies like Arbol Eco Homes are stepping up to make a difference. In today's episode, we're discussing what sustainable construction really means, how is it being applied in a local business, and what can we do to improve the industry as a whole. Sustainable construction is more than just a trend. It's a shift in how we think about the built environment. In my research, I found a 2024 study by Cove Tool. The sustainable construction is not just about environmental responsibility, but also about economic viability, social equity, and long-term resilience. Sustainable projects are designed with principles like resource efficiency and the circular economy in mind, ensuring that buildings don't just serve us today, but for generations to come. For example, a report by Forbes Solicitors highlights that 2023 was a year of significant transformation within the construction industry, with a strong push towards integrating renewable energy resources and prioritizing sustainability through the supply chain. Companies are recognizing that sustainable practices are not only good for the planet, but they also create competitive advantage advantages and long-term cost savings. The issue is, so many businesses are not implementing anything sustainable into their business models. Is this out of fear, laziness, or a lack of knowledge? To bring this issue closer to home, I recently sat down with Todd Cooper, Sales and Marketing Manager, and Marcus Allen, the founder of Arbol Eco Homes, to discuss how their company is addressing these critical issues in New Zealand's housing market. Arbol is setting new standards by designing homes that are not only energy efficient, but also healthier and more affordable in the long run. So now I'm going to show you some of an insightful conversation I had with them regarding what they had to say about the challenges and innovations they're seeing in sustainable architectural and construction practices. I'm now here with Todd and Marcus, who work at Arbol Eco Homes based in Cromwell in the South Island of New Zealand. Hi, guys.
G'day. How are you?
For our listeners, can you briefly introduce Arbol and what you stand for?
Cool. So, yeah, welcome to Arbol. Arbol is a high-performance prefabricated housing company manufacturing homes in our Cromwell facility. We're fed up with the poor housing standards in New Zealand and wanted to make a change. So Arbol is the point of difference and the disturbance to a better future and better housing standard.
Awesome. So what are some of the main issues you see in New Zealand's standard building practices with regard to sustainability?
Sustainability, we are 50%, at least 50% contributors to landfill and waste and carbon emissions globally.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, we have to do something about that, right? We have to have a better footprint for our future generations. So here at Arbol, we're dedicated to changing our waste consumption and managing our waste to make it better, and also reducing toxicity and VOCs from inside the building envelope. Yeah.
And also looking at energy use of the home, so reducing the heating demand on the home by up to 5 times, which is an important thing for the power grid going forward with energy consumption in New Zealand.
So what are the key issues your company addresses?
So we focus on building a better quality product,
yeah,
at an affordable price by reducing the volume of the building and putting that back into the quality. So more insulation, more better window standards, ventilation, heat recovery. By doing this, you are taking away moisture, excess moisture from the home. You're creating a warmer environment that requires less energy demand, less heating demand. You are creating a place that's problems like asthma or toxicity in the environment. So that's our major pillars of our company.
Yeah.
And why they're so important is because our homes are plagued with damp, coldy, drafty homes, and your really high toxicity, as Todd alluded to. So the solutions Arbol provide is, it's not just one solution, it's trying to aim at 5 key targets and then solve those points. Yeah.
So how do you balance sustainability with affordability, especially when it comes to making energy efficient homes accessible to a broader market?
Yeah, well, there is no sustainability without affordability. So for us, that's why we're offsite manufacturing, because we can be more efficient and control costs and manage all avenues of business.
So how do you see the future of sustainable construction evolving in New Zealand? Is there a regulator in place sympathetic to this very important cause? And if not, what governmental powers are moving in your direction?
There's no regulator in place looking at sustainability in that regard, but there are accreditation standards that you can go for, things like Homestar ratings, looking at the green business model and sustainability of the product, or also looking at things like Passive House, which look at energy modelling and energy use of the home in the construction phase. We'd love to see legislation change, that there is an improvement in the building code, that there's requirements for better insulation, less toxicity and building materials, looking at better ways of prefabrication, taking builds away from building sites. You're reducing rubbish. We're able to, as Marcus alluded to, recycle, reuse our products here. We're not putting it all into landfill. We can also generate a better quality product as well. And by doing it with repetition within a facility, we can bring down that cost.
So regulators from the government, we're actively working in communities, but they are self-led and B2B, they're not basically coming from the government as such. There's talks about carbon emissions, etc., but it really comes from the builders and the companies wanting to do better by themselves and then set a good example. And so for us, we're just trying to set the good example, show it's achievable.
Yeah.
There are organisations like Brands, and even through Building Code, where they are looking at improving the systems. But as we've seen just now recently, that insulation standards went up last May, and already the Chris Pink, the construction and building minister for New Zealand, is talking about taking that insulation level back down.
And that's just bad education. Right. So for us, it's about our balls. Another avenue of our ball is the education. Why do we do the things we do? How can we do better as a as a country. You know, going so far forward and then cutting the throats and going backwards, it doesn't work. You know, if we're setting examples, just educate on, okay, the insulation, yeah, it's improved and your home's overheating. Now let's look at the design. Let's look at designers to model the houses correctly so it's comfortable all year round, not just in winter.
Yeah.
So yeah, better designing and better education about why we're making the changes, and yeah, just looking overseas again and bringing the education back to New Zealand.
Yeah, definitely.
It works, it just needs to be educated.
So what role do you hope Arbor will play in the future of sustainable building in New Zealand?
Trailblazing, really. We've already trailblazed this far. We want to continue to set a path for more businesses, more Kiwis to understand that, yeah, hey, there's a battle at hand, but if nobody takes the plunge, there's no benefit. So
yeah,
for us, we're not trying to change the world per se. However, if we do our part, you know, the pebble in the pond, it's the ripple effect. If we're showing it's achievable, you know, for me, it's how we're impacting my son's life by doing the change now.
Yeah.
So if we can do better, show it's achievable, we've set an easier pathway for other people to achieve the same.
Yeah.
And a lot of this has come through that we do a lot of education as well. So we're educating builders coming through here that are just building on New Zealand Building Code, levelling them up to the difference in how a better home can be built. Also looking to, we've hosted the Passive House Tradesperson course. So builders outside of our company have come into our facility and been educated on better ways of building.
Oh, that's awesome.
We'd just love to see that expand. And hopefully by doing what we do, other people will be inspired to do it too.
Mm.
Yeah.
We've got grand plans to take this further and to bring more affordability to our product and repetition and scale as well. We'd like to see, right now we've sold 20 homes, so 20 families available to live in our product. We'd love to 10 times that as soon as possible.
What are the long-term benefits homeowners can expect from living in an Arbol home, both in terms of health and cost savings?
Reduced exposure to moisture leads to less likelihood of respiratory issues, like asthma is one of them. Reduced toxicity levels in the house, so we're taking away as much things like formaldehyde and toxic glues and treated timbers.
Mm.
Less exposure to that is good for the health, but it's also good for our build team, the people that are putting the house together, and the environment as a whole.
Yeah.
The other big one would be reduction in heating demand and power use of the home is going to see a big cost saving on the occupant's power bill and maintenance of the home as well. We're using really good structure detail and really good quality materials that'll stand a lifetime. So when we look at the green side of a product, we don't just look at the short-term benefit. We want to see that product will actually last. It's no good going for the greenest product if it doesn't stand the test of time. So unfortunately, sometimes we have to use something that's petrochemical based or a nastier product, but you see longevity. We need to see 50 plus years.
Yeah.
Instead of reusing or replacing every 5 years, you know, a corrugate, for instance, is a low maintenance product. It's going to stand the test of time versus a untreated timber that's going to be high maintenance and replaced more regularly. So the main objective of Arbol is the warm, dry, healthy home that's comfortable to live in, low impact and low maintenance. So you can get an affordable product that is going to essentially make you healthier by living in it. The indoor air quality is going to be higher than externally because we're removing dust and pollens through the filtration system.
Yeah.
And then it allows you to get out on the weekends and enjoy, you know, our beautiful country. We live in central Otago in Queenstown. This is literally magic.
Yeah.
So get out and enjoy it. Why are we having to maintain our homes continuously clean and seal and just keep it running? Whereas the home's built properly, you get the full management system of reducing costs, and then now you can get out and just enjoy what we have here in New Zealand. Yeah,
definitely. So were you inspired by any offshore companies who have adopted similar practices? And if so, can you describe them?
Yeah, it's the
Passive House, right?
Totally. Everything's come from overseas. This technology, these standards that we're building to have been talked about for a long time in New Zealand, but it's never been adopted or been put into practice. Europe's such a leader in what we do. Passive House, for instance, is over 30 years old. It's really only started to take off here in New Zealand in the last couple of years. So that alone is is one standard we've looked at. That's a German design practice. The other ones, the green side of it, or the sustainable side of ARBOL, again, Europe's doing such a good thing, looking at reduction of toxicity, lignin-based products, taking out the petroleum-based glues, only using water-based.
Headwaters Lodge.
Headwaters Lodge was a huge one for me. So the Brainards, constructed in 2016, I was working out in Glenorchy on Headwaters Eco Lodge.
And saw that on the website.
Yeah, for me, that was my major turning point, understanding the living building challenge and then the high performance and passive housing. For me, it was, how do I go back and do standard New Zealand building?
Yeah.
And it scared me a lot in the sense that we didn't have a standard, as we've talked to earlier. So the Brainards and the education they gave me in 2016, I was fortunate enough in 2020 to really have an opportunity to harness what they used to do there and what they taught us and put it into a more affordable model for everybody to have a piece of that pie.
Yeah.
It just being for the elitists or, you know, certain amount of money in the bank, this is now for everyday people who have the opportunity to own and live and get the experience of the betterment of a high performance low energy home. For us, Headwaters Lodge was a huge part of change in education for me. Yeah.
And I think we're not perfect by any means, but we're a continually evolving company, so we continually look to overseas or local suppliers. We've tested many a different product to settle on what we're with now in our current builds, but that doesn't mean that's 100% the future. There's other options that pop up all the time, better window systems, better framing technology, better ventilation systems, so we're continually looking to the market to what we could do and improve.
Continual innovation, yeah, it had to start somewhere. And our numbers really work. We're hitting exactly where we want. But for instance, the other week we changed our window systems and our air tightness dropped by 0.2 basis points. When you're dealing with those fine micro measurements, that's huge.
Yep.
So for us, continual innovation and just keep leading the way. Don't just be settling for, we think we've done well enough. It's no, let's continue to get better and do better. It's our mission and it's our purpose, really. Yeah.
So, after that interview, I wanted to look into similar case studies and found while ARBOL Eco Homes is leading the way in New Zealand, there are other notable examples of sustainable building projects globally. For instance, as I mentioned, Passive House, a German approach to home design that uses a combination of high-performance glazing, insulation, and airtight building envelope to regulate a home's internal temperature without relying on artificial heating or cooling. There's also the General Services Administration, or the GSA, in the United States, which has set high sustainability standards for federal building, aiming for a 30% improvement in energy efficiency by 2030, according to Cove Tool. This kind of initiative shows that when governments and businesses work together, real change is possible. But the industry still faces challenges. Many stakeholders still perceive sustainable construction as too costly or complicated, and there's a clear need for better education and stronger regulatory support. By providing training on eco-design and implementing better policies, we can break down these barriers and create a construction industry that is truly sustainable, according to Marvi. From what I've seen from ARBOL, there are several practices that they implement that could serve as a blueprint for other companies looking to reduce their environmental footprint and improve the quality of their homes. First, ARBOL's commitment to Passive House Standard is something every construction company should take note of. This standard prioritizes energy efficiency through superior insulation, air tightness, and heat recovery system, drastically reducing the need for artificial heating and cooling. The result? Homes that consume up to 70% less energy compared to conventional builds. If more companies adopted this approach, it would significantly reduce the overall energy consumption of the housing sector. Second, ARBOL focuses heavily on the use of sustainable materials. They source eco-friendly, low-emission materials such as sustainably harvested timber and non-toxic building products to create homes that are not only energy efficient but also healthier to live in. This is something the broader industry needs to prioritize. By opting for materials that have lower environmental impact and are free from harmful chemicals, companies can ensure that the buildings they construct contribute positively to both the planet and the human health. Another key practice is ARBOL's prefabrication process. Prefabrication allows them to minimize on-site waste, reduce construction time, and achieve a higher level of quality control. Other companies could benefit from this method as it offers cost savings, reduces carbon footprint of transportation, and results in less distribution to the local environment during the construction phase. Furthermore, prefabrication offers consistency and precision that traditional construction methods often lack. ARBOL's homes are also built with long-term affordability in mind.
The upfront costs of sustainable homes may be higher, but the reduced energy and maintenance costs over time make them worth it. This long-term perspective is something more developers and construction companies should consider. By designing homes with life cycles costs in mind, rather than just the initial build costs, they can create homes that are not only more sustainable, but also more accessible to the average homeowner. Lastly, community engagement plays a huge role in Arbol's success. They actively educate potential homeowners about the benefits of energy-efficient, sustainable living. This is an area where many companies also fall short. While they may adopt greener practices, they often fail to communicate the benefits effectively to the end user. By investing in awareness campaigns and educational initiatives, other companies could create a stronger market, demand for sustainable housing, and encourage consumers to make more informed choices. In order to make these recommendations actionable, governments and regulators should also play a role. Providing incentives like tax breaks for companies adopting passive houses standards or sustainable materials could encourage more widespread adoption of these practices. Furthermore, stricter building codes that mandate energy efficiency would push the entire industry towards greener practices. The shift to sustainable construction is not just about environmental responsibility. It's about staying competitive in an industry that's increasingly being shaped by the need for resilient, eco-friendly buildings. As Forbes solicitors highlighted, sustainability is no longer optional for companies wanting to strive in the construction industry. It's time for more businesses to adopt these practices and create a future where homes are energy efficient, affordable, and designed with the well-being of both the planet and its inhabitants in mind. So to wrap things up, companies like Arbol Eco Homes are proving that sustainable building is not just possible, it is the future. They're leading by example, showing how we can create homes that are environmentally responsible, affordable, and healthy for the people who live in them. But for widespread change to happen, other companies need to follow suit. It's time for the industry to stop focusing solely on short-term profits and start thinking about the long-term health of the planet and its people. With construction accounting for such a high significant portion of global energy use and CO2 emissions, it's clear that we no longer can afford to build in unsustainable ways. By adopting sustainable practices, we can reduce our environmental impact, create healthier communities, and ensure a better future for everyone. So thank you for tuning in today. If you're interested in learning more about sustainable building practices, or how you can get involved, be sure to check out Arbol's website and other resources mentioned in this episode. And lastly, thank you to Todd and Marcus at Arbol for their fabulous contribution to this episode. Hope you all enjoyed. Thank you for listening. For anyone wanting to do their own research on sustainable building, these are some of the references that I have used and cited throughout this podcast. First, in academic research, is a study by Marvi et al. In 2021, Sustainability in Construction Projects, a Systematic Literature Review. Second is Sustainability in the Construction Industry, a Systematic Review of the Literature by Lima et al. In 2021. Sustainable Building Processes, Challenges and Strategies, the Relative Important Index Approach by Ayakwa in 2022. Barriers and Drivers for Sustainable Building by Harkonnen and Bologna in 2011. And then Green Building Project Management, Obstacles and Solution for Sustainable Development by Wu and Lo, 2010. For news articles that I have cited throughout this podcast, it is The Rise in Importance for Sustainability within the Construction Industry in 2023 by Forbes Solicitors by Dyer. I then use Sustainable Construction Transforming the Future of Building Design by Cove Tool, who are experts in sustainability and consulting company states.
Zoe, that was amazing. Thank you very, very much. That was a really thoughtful interview. What's your big takeaway that you got from it?
My big takeaway from it is that there are other strategies to how you can build a home. Like, as they see that they build their whole home in the shed using such great materials, such great strategies, and they've made it so that families can be healthier in their homes. I know as a student, I've lived in so many homes where I've gotten, you know, you get pneumonia, you get sick, it's so awful. And Todd, who's the founder of the company, as he said in the podcast, he pretty much started this company because his son developed asthma from living in such poorly designed houses. So I think if people are wanting to buy a home or build a home, they should definitely be looking at these strategies that they've implemented into their company.
One of your classmates interviewed a company, and they landed on this knowledge that you can actually, often it's more economical to build a home if you follow these kind of basic principles of sustainability and putting the person first. It's cheaper than houses are being built at the moment. And it actually doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't
make sense to not do that, to not actually put the person and their well-being as the first priority. And the other thing we talked about was what Ngāi Tūhoe have done with building their buildings around here in the Bay of Plenty. Their buildings are designed so that when the humans are gone and the buildings go, that they will just, all of the materials will just find their way back into the earth, and there's nothing toxic in any of their buildings. It's incredible, eh? So that work has been done to find those products that you can use and find old ways of doing things. And yeah, so, oh, that's really neat. So if you think about the principles that underpin their practice, what will you take going forward into your own practice?
I think I look for sustainability in many of the things I do going forward now that I know so much about it. Like, I know it's actually not so hard to access as many people think. It's not so expensive that you just can't afford it. And because in the long run, in reality, so often if you pay for something that is better up front, you won't be having to pay that so many costs going forward to repair a pretty mediocre product. So I found doing this sort of research, it's so inspiring finding people like Todd, because it's, yeah, better for the planet, better for you. It's fabulous.
That is such a good thing. And if we think about where you're headed from here, because you've got a bit of study left, you've got a thesis to come up with, and we'll talk about your thesis soon. But if I was the magic wish fairy who could create the perfect job for you that you could start tomorrow, what would it be?
Oh, God, that's a tricky question. Oh, no, I actually don't know. I would love to work for a company like Arbole Homes. I would love to find out the actual science behind it, understand it. I do really enjoy marketing and management and that side of business. Anything creative, I really love to do. So, yeah, it's a really tricky question. I have not actually given that much thought. Because I know for right now, I'm 21 years old. I can't wait to travel the world and see what's out there.
Oh, that sounds exciting. Yeah. And you've already traveled. So it's you've just got a huge advantage in the way your perception of the world is different just because you've traveled and experienced other cultures.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. Hong Kong definitely gave me a leg up because they sort of called it a cultural desert because there's so many that there's, you know, they called it nothing at all, but I found it so interesting because one class that I had, you had every single religion in there, every single different type of person. I loved it. It was so fabulous and it's taught me so much.
That's neat.
Yeah.
With your, you've got your thesis coming up. And you're pretty clear about what you're going to do. What do you hope will be the outcome of that?
I think Queenstown is still in the development stages of finalising how they're going to diversify their own economy, although it is something that will definitely happen in the future. I'm hoping that with the recommendations and the research that I do find and create, hopefully maybe it could be used by other people. Maybe I know I'll be doing a focus group as part of my primary research, and I'll be gathering all of these opinions from different stakeholders, whether they work in the tourist sector or otherwise. I think it would just be really interesting research to just have out there of what could be done, because it'll be looking at the long-term solutions.
That sounds really exciting.
Yeah,
I think what you're going to find is that those things are already happening in Queenstown, the things you talked about, the technology and education. And so it's going to be a matter of how do we actually enable those to become more visible and have more impact.
Yes, yeah. It'll be how do we expand it? How do we make it so much bigger that it's actually, yeah, that it's feasible? It'll be very interesting to look into.
Here in Whakatane, we had a huge tourism industry around Whakatane or White Island, and we went from 360,000 people coming a year into our town to nothing, stopped the overnight in one go. And our whole identity as a community changed because we were the gateway to Whakatane. all of our tourism infrastructure was built around specifically one night, two night maximum stays. Every business relied on it, and it was gone in one go. And so we can relate what it's like to be the tourist town that all of a sudden has no tourists anymore.
Yeah.
And it's really tricky. It's tricky because how do you redefine yourself in one go like that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully it's going to be a positive. It's a positive to redefine yourself. I think for Queenstown, tourism is always going to be the biggest part of it because it's an adventure capital. It is so beautiful. It will attract tourists, but to make it a happier place for residents will be great. And it could be cool if these lessons that I come across could be used in other towns as well around New Zealand that are tourist dependent.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You're a very positive person, Zoe. Where does that come from?
Maybe my family, my friends, just very positive outlook on life. Been very lucky to see so much, and yeah, I would just love to make a positive impact one day.
You said that the two things that sent you off down a pathway of sustainable business was Sarah's class and things your dad keeps telling you. What does he tell you?
Well, my dad is very big into reading the news and telling me, oh, here's this, here's that, and he's got some very cool friends as well. Like his friends introduced him to Todd and Marcus at Arbor Homes. So, you know, he's got some great connections. And so I'm learning lots from what he tells me about all the cool things his friends are doing. So it's fabulous. Yeah.
If you could wave a magic wand, a different magic wand to Moira's one, we should get little magic wands to wave Moira. I've been thinking that the whole series, I've only thought just to mention it. If you could have a magic wand to make the world a better place, what would you have happen?
That's a great question. I want to say something like world peace, but everyone has a different definition of what their, you know, the most fabulous future would be for them. So it's very tricky. But if we could get a similar image in mind of what we want to see in the future, for like my children's generation and my grandchildren's generation, creating the most sustainable alternatives for everything we're doing now that's creating so much harm would be fabulous.
Can you think of something, the smallest thing that we could do towards that that would have the biggest impact? Is it about creating a vision? Is it about actually having a discussion about what that vision might be?
Yeah, I think having a good discussion, finding out what does everyone want to see in their future and trying to come to the happiest medium and, you know, little steps from there, starting with sort of what Arbo Eco Homes is doing, for example. Everyone starts buying houses, doing this process and, you know, eliminating all of these, or not all of them, but so many carbon emissions, and, you know, you'll then be healthier in the future. Just little things that create so many different positive runoff effects.
Perhaps to start that discussion, what's your go-to definition of sustainability?
I think sustainability is about making choices that prioritise the well-being of both people and the planet. So a strategy of things that have the goal of being long-term oriented, so about creating systems like housing that don't just meet our immediate needs but also ensure future generations have a healthy and livable environment. Yeah.
You've got some insight into thinking about that perhaps from places that aren't the safety of Queenstown. Do you think that same definition flies in Hong Kong?
Yes. I think that definition applies everywhere. That is what sustainability means to me based on my understanding of it. Hong Kong definitely isn't as sustainable as it should be. But I think, yeah, this definition does apply to anywhere.
I have some questions to end the show.
Sure.
What is your biggest success in the last couple of years?
My biggest success is coming into myself more. You know, as a teenager, I was very lost. I didn't have very many ambitions when it came to career ideas, and I'm finding things slowly as I'm doing more research, what interests me. And I think my greatest success is doing this master's program, and I'm achieving what I want to achieve. I'm doing well, I'm learning a lot, and hopefully, well, I'll be growing myself as a person. I think it's very interesting, and I think that would be my biggest success.
What's your superpower?
My superpower is being kind and chatty, I think. I love a good chat. I am quite extroverted, actually. I'm very good at chatting. Got that from my dad as well.
What's your superpower name, Lady Chatty?
Lady Chatty, I like that. Yes, Lady Chatty.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Not so far, but perhaps in the future, yes, definitely. I know I tell my friends, but I don't publicly do it, no.
What motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
My family and friends, and just striving, and myself actually, just striving to be the best version of myself.
What challenge or opportunity are you looking forward to in the next year or so?
Writing this thesis, for sure. That's going to be quite a challenge for me. And also finding a good job that I'm interested in next year. Just finding a really good job.
I think you're on the right. You know, that thing about finding a job you love and you won't do a day's work. It's a lie, of course. But I think you're on the way to finding that sort of thing.
Yeah, I really hope so. Oh, so far, I've only worked in sort of hospitality, retail, and at a call centre. So anything different to that would be lovely.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I think supporting sustainable building, sustainable practices, really thinking about what your perfect future looks like and what you can do to support that idea and start to make moves so that for future, for just our children's generation, if you're a student like me, it's looking happier, brighter and healthier.
Sounds good to me.
Zoe, it has been a joy having you in our shared learning space this last semester. You've got your positive view of the future and your excitement are so contagious.
Thank you. Really
cool having you in the class, and I would say that if all of your classmates were here, they would have the same thing to say.
Thank you.
It was a really great interview. Your podcast was amazing, and I've taken a lot from that as well for some of the things, some projects I'm involved in, so yeah, super timely. But I just wanted to just wish you all the best for your future ahead, and thank you so much for bringing all of yourself to the things that you do, which is, that's a real gift to the world. So good luck with everything.
Thanks for joining us today. It's been so much fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Where's his Sunday best? Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street. Gets up late for work. Mother has to iron his shirt. Then she sends the kids to school. Sees them off with a small kiss. She's the one they're going to miss in lots of ways.
Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We are broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We have a contribution today from Tony McKenzie. This is Madness with our house in the middle of our street. Today, Moira Karatai introduced Zoe Abyss with her contribution of Coming Up for Air. That was Blowing Bubbles. I'm Sam Clare. We hope you enjoyed the show. Was our castle and our king, our house, in the middle of our street, our house.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.